Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James and Pastor Steve here on Eurofolk Radio. Today is May 5th, 2019. This is Bloodlines, the charter show of Eurofolk Radio. Our first episode was an episode of Bloodlines with me and Andy. And today we're going to continue our series on Josephus and the history of Herod. But first, I want to make a quick announcement. Last night I did a Restoration Hour show with Jeffrey Weekly, who is a Christian identity pastor who has actually done prison time for his faith. He wrote a book called How God Gave Us the Canon of the Scriptures, and he provides much evidence that the canon was actually established by the Apostle John and not by the Council of Nicaea, as most people are taught. And that's what I was taught, and that's what I believed for the longest time, until I read this book. So it is highly worth reading. So I encourage you to listen to that show, Restoration Hour, from yesterday. Okay? Before we get into the...
I got an ad here.
Okay.
All right. We have a new show coming up on the 11th. That's a Saturday. It is Brother Hebert Presents, and Sickness Versus Health. That's the first one.
Okay.
And it is between 1 and 2 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time on Saturdays. So that will be a regular show on Saturdays. It's going to be very, very interesting. I've got 16 shows loaded already, so there's 16 weeks of that show, and then we'll pick repeat slots here and there wherever they're available.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
I wanted to bring that to your attention. Okay, there's that. I've downloaded a whole bunch of Carl Klang and other, you know, Scottish music, Celtic Irish music, some really pretty stuff, and some stuff that makes you want to get up and dance the war dance when the Scottish drums are pounding. It's really exciting. No. Bagpipes and the
right.
whole bit, it's rocking.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
A lot of new stuff coming on EFR, folks. So check the schedules, and we may surprise you with some goodies. Over to you, Eli.
Okay, so over the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about the departure of David James from Eurofolk Radio. And I've prepared a statement about this, and I'm going to read it. And this is designed to let people know why I was forced to remove David James from Eurofolk Radio, okay? And this is entitled, Something's Come Between Us, an explanation of why David James had to be released from EFR. When I returned from a very successful and heartwarming fash bash in the Poconos, I was confronted with requests from both Paul English and Andy Hitchcock to investigate David James' attack upon these two gentlemen, essentially accusing them of cowardice and making provocative statements such as, quote, one of them is not a man of God, the other is, unquote. The fact is that both Paul and Andy live in the UK, where there is no guarantee of free speech. One wrong word could bring the Orwellian thought police knocking on their door. DJ is fully aware of this. The fact that they are on EFR at all is proof of their courage, not cowardice. Should early Christians have met out in the open or in the catacombs? Are they cowards too? It is ironic that David James has often spoken out against causing division among the brethren. The essence of Andy's complaint was that DJ should have communicated his thoughts to Andy and Paul personally instead of taking pot shots at other show hosts on the air. I agreed that DJ's on-air criticisms were unprofessional. I will now play about a four-minute clip of that show. Here we go.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the One-to-One Radio Show. This is David James, and of course, I'm your host again. Did you see the Pope kissing more black men's feet? I think this Pope has a fetish. He says it's to humiliate himself, to show he's humble. That's what they did to the German soldiers at the Nuremberg trials, things like that. They made them, forced them to do things, crush their testicles, all kinds of things. I couldn't even begin to tell you how angry I am about that. Anyway, the Pope is one of the most screwed up creatures on the planet. There's so many demons floating in that thing. It is just remarkable. Now, I have to mention this because, you know, I don't like to, you know, keep on prodding. But I listened to a show with two hosts on EFR. And they were continually buttering each other's bread. And if that wasn't sickening enough, then they began to make excuses of why they can't talk about the truth and certain things about the truth and this and that because their lives would be in danger. And they bundled up a whole bunch of excuses to make themselves feel good about it. But I must say that either you're in the war or you're not in the war. Just imagine if Yeshua said to the disciples as he sent them out, listen, you're going to be in dangerous territory out there, and you could lose your lives. So don't preach the full gospel and don't defend the truth and don't offend any Jews either. Just go out there and kind of, you know, try to get a truthful message across, okay? Can you imagine? I mean, this is so ridiculous. I mean, the stuff I was hearing, I had to shut the show off after a while because it's the ridiculous nonsense of it all. You know, it'd be like me going to war. Oh, I'm in the war. I'm in the war, but I'm going to stay here in the country. I'm not going to go out to where the war is because I could get killed out there. And, you know, I'm not really in the war, but, you know, I'm in the war. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to defend anything. I'm not going to try to stir up the waters at all. I'm just going to sit there and relax. I mean, after all, you don't have to do this, they said. You can tiptoe through the tulips and still get your message across. That's wonderful. That's really wonderful, fellas. It's nice to meet men. Well, one of them's not a man of God anyway, but the other one is. But men? That's questionable.
Okay, I think we've heard enough of that, folks. Getting back to the story and to my reading of the complaint against David James.
Wow.
Even more disturbing were two messages I had received from Pastor Steve and Big Jim in Arkansas that David had suggested to each of them privately that I am a Jew, thus engaging in rumor mongering against a person who has provided DJ with a free broadcasting platform for nearly 5 years. Among the reasons DJ gave for suggesting that I am Jewish was my supposed short stature. I am 5 feet 9 inches tall. And the fact
my dad,
that
My dad was 5'9".
Yeah, good for him. He must be Jewish too. And the fact that my arms have splotchy skin. Although I am a couple of inches shorter than David, my height is the average for white males. I might have grown taller, except for the fact that growing up in post-war Germany, there was little food to be had. Immediately after World War II, the German people were living on a near-starvation diet. If my growth was stunted, this is the reason. As for my splotchy skin, David had once asked me about this. I explained to him that this skin condition was caused by a severe sunburn I had received at a rally in Indiana around 2010. I confronted David about these rumors. He did not confirm or deny the allegations, merely saying that, quote, "I never called you a Jew," unquote. But suggesting to others that I might be Jewish is clearly provocative and a violation of my trust in him. Diablos is the false accuser. David has been playing this part in recent weeks and months. The scriptures say, quote, "By their fruits shall ye know them," unquote. David cannot say that I have done him any wrong or harm. On the contrary, EFR has provided him free of charge a platform for his music, politics, and Bible teachings. Yes, his early contributions to EFR were enormous, and all of us here and you listeners learned a lot from his Bible studies and his exposés of the Freemasons, Jews, feminists, etc. Whenever I had a problem with David's teachings, I would contact him personally. I would never take a shot at him on the air. For example, I had to ask him to tone down his anti-woman rhetoric, as this was driving female listeners away from EFR. His on-air complaints that our listeners weren't donating enough money to him or buying his music was also cringeworthy. I called him and told him that berating his listeners for being stingy is not a productive way of increasing donations. Signs of real trouble began at the 2018 Feast of Tabernacles in Kentucky, which was attended by both DJ and Professor Truth. David James was openly hostile to Professor Truth at this conference, thus causing unnecessary friction at an otherwise wonderful event. I could see the confusion on Professor Truth's face at this open hostility. DJ was trying to convince me without offering any proof that Professor Truth was a government agent and not to be trusted. I scoffed at this, and I still do. If PT were an agent, the FBI or CIA would have knocked at my door and Pastor Steve's door long ago. PT has our home addresses. The fact of the matter is that the 20 or so shows that Steve and I did with Professor Truth were very well received by his audience, and we attracted many new followers. I still get emails from these people even today, after 6 months of separation from Professor Truth. DJ also accused me and Steve of succumbing to Professor Truth's flattery. If that were true, Steve and I would not have split with Professor Truth over his refusal to follow Yahweh's divorce and remarriage laws. Andy Hitchcock is a witness to our firm stand for Yahweh's laws against Professor Truth's intention to violate them. If we were susceptible to flattery, we could have turned a blind eye to Professor Truth's adultery in favor of getting more listeners. Nor did PT, the supposed government agent, send the flak jackets in to round us up, even after this breakup. I later found out that DJ's ire was aroused by the fact that PT had gotten a hold of DJ's mailing list, after which DJ accused PT of stealing donations from him. I have no idea how this could have happened. It may be DJ's own fault, as all that is necessary to make your list public is to accidentally hit the CC button, that is the copy button, as opposed to the BCC button, which is private, does not post your email address on the screen, when you send out a mass mailing. I assert these incidents to our listeners so that you will understand why we had to part company with David James. For him to spread rumors about me being Jewish, after all that I have done for him, is quite astonishing. His taking pot shots at all of the other show hosts was the last straw in a long line of abuses that have been going on for 6 months or more. This is either irrational or malicious behavior towards those of us who have done him no wrong. For example, In April of 2018, I flew to Boston to help David load up his two moving vans and empty out the house he was selling there. I drove the rental van 1,450 miles free of charge and helped him unload the two vans. Would a Jew do that for an Israelite? Would a Jew file motions on behalf of Aryan prisoners in America's prison system or send these prisoners CI newsletters on a regular basis? Would a Jew teach CI to whites at all? Show me an example. When I confronted David about his Diablos-type behavior, he accused me of lying to him about my skin condition. So I sent him a medical document showing how a bad sunburn can result in splotchy skin. The mere fact that I got sunburned at all proves that I am an Aryan. With rare exceptions, only Aryans are capable of losing pigment from sunburn. And I will quote an article, if David needs proof, "Sunburn That Leaves Permanent Pigmentation" by Ellen Douglas. While several factors may contribute to irregular skin pigmentation, the condition often results from repeated episodes of sunburn, notes Medline Plus. The look of patchy or mottled skin stems from an overproduction of the skin pigment known as melanin, which your body produces as a defense against the sun's UV rays. Uneven production of melanin results in uneven skin tone. So, folks, I mean, you know, the accusation that I might be Jewish because of my splotchy skin is absolutely absurd. So I lied to you, David. Methinks you have been listening to too much William Fink. So David is wrong on all counts. His communications to me about me are as malicious as those I got from Wickstrom, Fink, Emmeheiser, and others, all of whom had been accusing me of being Jewish without any evidence or with obviously concocted evidence. Now David James has joined them. I am not going to speculate as to why, but it is obvious that DJ was unhappy about the lack of support he was getting from EFR listeners. When he joined EFR, David got instant recognition from our listeners, and we got a much-needed Jew-savvy show host. But recent events have demonstrated to me that I can no longer trust this individual who has resorted to underhanded tactics in order to elevate himself above the rest of us. This is neither Aryan nor Christian behavior. Brotherly love demands more than what David has been giving lately. One more point, and this is personal from me to you, David. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thus concludes the prepared statement on the David James situation. Any comments from you, Pastor Steve?
Well, I am very disheartened that this has occurred. David and I were supposedly friends, and when David said what he said about you to me, now David has said that I betrayed him.
Okay.
Big Jim down there in Arkansas is the one that told you first. Then I reiterated and I said, yes, that's what he said. Let me tell you something about Eli James. Eli James helped support me while I was in prison. Published a lot of my stuff. He came all the way down to Arkansas when I was released from prison after 15 years. Picked me up personally and brought me up to Lexington to the halfway house that I had to stay in for 6 months. A Jew would not do that. Those of you that have read my publications know that I am solid CI and have a Bible study background that spans a long, long time. I was on the airwaves on a regular radio station, which is what the government wanted shut down, which is why I went to prison, because they attacked me and I fought back. Well, you just don't do that. The government doesn't tolerate that. I didn't die like a good citizen. Excuse me. Eli has supported me. Eli and I have expanded his prison ministry with this Prisoner Bible Fund. I have quite a bit of money that has been donated, and we have been sending Bibles out. I'm buying Bibles by the case and sending them to select prisoners. A Jew would not do that. My first loyalty is to Eli, because the fruits of Eli's life and behavior show what he is. When somebody that I consider a friend attacks Eli, they lose my loyalty. And I'm sorry if David feels the way he does, but that's tough. Now he has got in the show chat, on the EFR show chat, and has accused me of stealing material and copying his shows. In some of his recent shows, he's talked about the copycat at EFR. Now, these would be my wake-up call shows. He is referring to me. I don't even listen to David's shows because of the temperament of what he has been saying. He's been so caustic, I just couldn't listen to them. I don't need to steal his material. Anybody that has listened to me for any time is quite aware of that. The decision to remove David James was not my decision. It was Eli's decision, and he consulted with a number of us, and enough is enough. I mean, we have been tolerant. We have been forgiving. We have counseled with him, and all to no avail. He has not changed. He has not repented. He is continuing on the offensive elsewhere. I'm sorry that he had to leave, but the elders that are on the council at EFR have a responsibility to this ongoing ministry, and that's what EFR is. It's a ministry. We have to be good stewards of what we have been blessed with. We have had to remove other people for misbehavior. David was removed for his misbehavior. I'm sorry that he is unrepentant and continues on the offensive. I wish him well. I hope he turns his life around and gets his mind cleaned out and gets it straight. I am very, very sorry that this had to be done. And that's all I've got to say about that.
All right. Thank you for that, Pastor Steve. And yes, in the chat room, when you have an issue, this is Israelite law. This is Yahweh's law. That if you have an issue with another Israelite, and I don't think David has accused either Paul or Andy or you of being non-Israelites, then you are to take that issue up with that person personally. You're not supposed to talk behind people's backs. And if you don't get the issue resolved with that person, then you are to call in another witness. Okay? That is the law. David did not follow that law in any case. And because it's obvious that he would not get any backup, so that's why he didn't do that. So, folks, that's the situation. I think you can understand that I had to act, and I acted accordingly. But when he accused me on Skype that I lied to him about my skin condition, I knew that I was dealing with a caustic, angry person, and I am not the cause of his anger. I had nothing to do with it. I did him no wrong. In fact, as Pastor Steve said, we have been more than patient. Almost 490 times. Because he has been taking pot shots at all of us on his shows for several months now. Enough is enough. And that's that. Okay? So you can continue to listen to his shows. He's on BitChute. He would be well advised not to criticize EFR anymore, because I have a record, and I have a written record of his comments to me on Skype, which are very, very reckless, very reckless. So, and I could quote from that as well if I need to, but I don't need to. So, Pastor Steve, without any delay, let's get back into the Antiquities of the Judahites by Josephus. We left off in book
16. We are in book 16, chapter 10, verse 8.
Okay. All right, you want to pick it up there?
All righty. When these ambassadors were come to Rome, they had a fit opportunity of delivering their letters to Caesar because they found him reconciled to Herod. For the circumstances of Nicolaus's delegation had been as follows. As soon as he was come to Rome and was about the court, he did not first of all set about what he was come for only, but he thought fit also to accuse Sylleus. Now the Arabians, even before he came to talk with them, were quarreling with one another, and some of them left Sylleus's party, and joining themselves to Nicolaus, informed him of all the wicked things that had been done, and produced to him evident demonstrations of the slaughter of a great number of Obodas' friends by Sylleus. For when these men left Sylleus, they had carried off with them those letters whereby they could convict him. When Nicolaus saw such an opportunity afforded him, he made use of it in order to gain his own point afterward, and tried immediately to make a reconciliation between Caesar and Herod, for he was fully satisfied that if he should desire to make a defense for Herod directly, he should not be allowed that liberty. But that if he desired to accuse Sylleus, there would an occasion present itself of speaking on Herod's behalf. So when the cause was ready for a hearing and the day was appointed, Nicolaus, while Aretas's ambassadors were present, accused Sylleus and said that he imputed to him the destruction of the king, that would be Obodas, and of many others of the Arabians, that he had borrowed money for no good design, and he proved that he had been guilty of adultery, not only with the Arabian, but Roman women also.
Ooh, that's a cut.
Okay.
All right.
And he added that above all the rest, he had alienated Caesar from Herod, and that all that he had said about the actions of Herod were falsities. When Nicolaus was come to this topic, Caesar stopped him from going on and desired him only to speak to this affair of Herod, and to show that he had not led an army into Arabia, nor killed 2,500 men there, nor taken prisoners, nor pillaged the country. To which Nicolaus made this answer, quote, I shall mainly demonstrate that either nothing at all, or but a very little, of those imputations are true, of which you have been informed, for had they been true, you might justly have been still more angry at Herod, unquote. At this strange assertion, Caesar was very attentive. And Nicolaus said that there was a debt due to Herod of 500 talents and a bond wherein it was written that if the time appointed to be lapsed, it should be lawful to make a seizure out of any part of his country. As for the pretended army, he said, it was no army, but a party sent out to require the just payment of the money. That this was not sent immediately, nor so soon as the bond allowed, but that Sylleus had frequently come before Saturninus and Volumnius, the presidents of Syria, and that at last he had sworn at Berytus by your fortune that he would certainly pay the money within 30 days and deliver up the fugitives that were under his dominion. And that when Sylleus had performed nothing of this, Herod came again before the presidents, and upon their permission to make a seizure for his money, he, with difficulty, went out of his country with a party of soldiers for that purpose. And this is all the war which these men so tragically describe. And this is the affair of the expedition into Arabia. And how can this be called a war when your presidents permitted it? The covenants allowed it. And it was not executed until your name, oh, Caesar, as well as that of other gods had been profaned, because they considered Caesar a god.
That's right.
Massive flattery here.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I must speak in order about the captives. There were robbers that dwelt in Trachonitis. At first their number was no more than 40, but they became more afterward, and they escaped the punishment Herod would have inflicted on them by making Arabia their refuge. Sylleus received them and supported them with food, that they might be mischievous to all mankind, and gave them a country to inhabit, and himself received the gains they made by robbery.
And that is true. Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
Yet he promised that he would deliver up these men, and that by the same oaths and same time that he swore and fixed for payment of his debt, not can he by any means show that any other persons have at this time been taken out of Arabia beside these. And indeed, not all these neither, but only so many as could not conceal themselves. And thus does the slander of the captives, which has been so odiously represented, appear to be no better than a fiction and a lie, made on purpose to provoke your indignation. For I venture to affirm that when the forces of the Arabians came upon us, and one or two of Herod's party fell, he then only defended himself, and there fell Nasibus, their general, and in all about 25 others, and no more. Thus, Sylleus, by multiplying every single soldier to 100, he reckons the killed to have been 2,500. Next section is yours, sir.
Okay, well, there's also a footnote about the swearing by Caesar. Do you have that?
Yes, this oath, by the fortune of Caesar, was put to Polycarp, a bishop of Smyrna, by the Roman governor to try whether he were a Christian, as they were then esteemed who refused to swear that oath.
Very
and
interesting.
That is in the Book of Martyrs.
Yes.
Polycarp, section 9.
Okay. And Jeff Weekly and I talked a lot about Polycarp on the Restoration Hour show to prove that he was a direct descendant or disciple of John, the Apostle John.
Okay. Is a Polycarp a plastic fish?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
I don't eat carp anyway. So, all right. So this is no honor among thieves is the comment I have about section 8. okay? Mm-hmm. They're both sides were embellishing the facts, you know. The response here in Herod's defense was, by Nicolaus, was masterful. Masterful, right? So he flattered Caesar and left out pertinent facts and then embellished the truth. Okay? That's how politicians do it. Okay? Section 9. This provoked Caesar more than ever. So he turned to Sylleus full of rage and asked him how many of the Arabians were slain. Hereupon he hesitated and said he had been imposed upon. Hesitation. The covenants were also read about the money that he had borrowed and the letters of the presidents of Syria and the complaints of the several cities. So many as had been injured by the robbers. The conclusion was this, that Sylleus was condemned to die and that Caesar was reconciled to Herod. Herod's good fortune. There was always somebody around he could blame and get away with it. And owned his repentance for what severe things he had written to him, occasioned by calumny, insomuch that he told Sylleus that he had compelled him, by his lying account of things, to be guilty of ingratitude against the man that was his friend. At the last, all came to this. Sylleus was sent away to answer Herod's suit and to repay the debt that he owed, and after that to be punished with death. But still Caesar was offended with Aretas that he had taken upon himself the government without his consent first obtained, for he had determined to bestow Arabia upon Herod, but that the letters he had sent hindered him from so doing. For Olympus and Voluminous, perceiving that Caesar was now become favorable to Herod, thought fit immediately to deliver him the letters that they were commanded by Herod to give him concerning his sons. When Caesar had read them, he thought it would not be proper to add another government to him. Now he was old and in an ill state with relation to his sons, so he admitted Aretas' ambassadors. And after he had just reproved him for his rashness, in not tarrying till he received the kingdom from him, he accepted of his presence and confirmed him in his government. So, I mean, Herod has nothing but good luck throughout, outside, with the outside world. But internally, he is full of turmoil with himself and his family, which is par for the course for Jews. All right, they connive to be in good favor with everybody they want to manipulate, but among themselves, they are fighting and in turmoil. It's exactly, I mean, this is a parable. The life of Herod is a parable of the Jewish conscience, consciousness, and Jewish attitude toward the rest of the world, especially us whites. Back to you, Pastor Steve.
Oy, vat chutzpah.
That's right, chutzpah.
They got the chutzpah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we begin chapter 11. Let me get a little drink of this hot coffee. Oh, I needed that. This is how Herod, by permission from Caesar, accused his sons before an assembly of judges at Berytus, and what terror suffered for using a boundless and military liberty of speech, concerning also the death of the young men and their burial at Alexandrium. This is section 1 here of chapter 11. So, Caesar was now reconciled to Herod and wrote thus to him, that he was grieved for him on account of his sons, and that in case they had been guilty of any profane and insolent crimes against him, it would behoove him to punish them as parricides, for which he gave him power accordingly. But if they had only contrived to fly away, he would have him give them an admonition and not proceed to extremity with them. He also advised him to get an assembly together and to appoint some place near Berytus, and there's a footnote there, which is a city belonging to the Romans, and to take the presidents of Syria and Archelaus, king of Cappadocia, and as many more as he thought to be illustrious for their friendship to him, and the dignities they were in, and determined what should be done by their approval. These were the directions that Caesar gave him. Accordingly, Herod, when the letter was brought to him, was immediately very glad of Caesar's reconciliation to him, and very glad also that he had a complete authority given him over his sons. And it strangely came about that whereas before in his adversity, although he had indeed showed himself severe, yet had he not been very rash nor hasty in procuring the destruction of his sons. He now, in his prosperity, took advantage of this change for the better, and the freedom he now had to exercise his hatred against them after an unheard of manner.
Indeed, unheard of.
He, therefore, sent and called as many as he thought fit to this assembly, excepting Archelaus. For as for him, he either hated him so that he would not invite him, or he thought he would be an obstacle to his designs. Section
right.
2, over to you.
Okay, and it bears repeating that Archelaus was concerned for the safety of his daughter, who was married to one of Herod's sons. Okay, so Archelaus was in extreme anxiety over this, and the bad blood between him and Herod over the situation. But go ahead and read the footnote here to appoint some place near Berytus. Do you have that?
Yeah, if I can get the pages to separate.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, I have footnote. It here. Yeah. Maybe they forgot
it. I'm looking
it.
For it, and I can't.
Okay. Yeah, I've noticed there's differences between your version and mine, but I'll go ahead and read it. What Josephus relates...
Oh, here it is.
Oh, you got it? Okay.
I think. It's all the way at the end of the chapter.
Oh, okay.
What Josephus relates Augustus to have here said, that Berytus was a city belonging to the Romans, is confirmed by Spanheim's notes here. It was, says he, a colony placed there by Augustus. Thus Ulpian, dissenter, whatever, I can't read that stuff. Mm-hmm. The colony of Berytus was rendered famous by the benefits of Caesar, and from there it is that among the coins of Augustus we meet with some having this inscription, the happy colony of Augustus at Berytus.
Very good. All right, this demonstrates that for the most part, I would say 99.9% of the time, Josephus' records are accurate, very accurate compared to most historians. Right?
Well, the records are accurate, mm-hmm. but he tones down his opinion and adds flattery because he didn't want to go the way of losing his head.
Yeah, like Archelaus
he had to be
might.
Very, very careful and circumspect,
right.
so he can continue with this history. He was documenting all this stuff,
right?
But he had to be very careful.
Mm-hmm. And
maybe he was. Maybe he was a coward.
Yeah, right. Maybe he was a coward.
Yeah.
So, he had to be very discreet not to offend the reigning god. That went by the
name
of Augustus.
Oh, yeah, they went to extremes back then.
Oh, yeah, you had to be really careful what you said.
Oh,
all right,
yeah.
Section 2. When the presidents and the rest that belonged to the cities were come to Berytus, he kept his sons in a certain village belonging to Sidon called Platana. But near, and Sidon is where the Phoenicians started mm-hmm. out from, okay?
Yes.
The ships were sailed by Israelite sailors but they were controlled by Canaanite Sidonians, okay, called Platana. But near to the city, that if they were called, he might produce them, for he did not think fit to bring them before the assembly. And when there were 100, Canaanites get off again. And when there were 150 assessors present, Herod came by himself alone and accused his sons, and in such a way as if it were not a melancholy accusation, and not made but out of necessity, and upon the misfortunes he was under. Indeed, in such a way as was very indecent for a father to accuse his sons, for he was very vehement and disordered when he came to the demonstration of the crime they were accused of, and gave the greatest signs of passion and barbarity. So his true self came out. Nor would he suffer the assessors to consider of the weight of the evidence, but asserted them to be true by his own authority, after a manner most indecent in a father against his sons, and read himself what they themselves had written, wherein there was no confession of any plots or contrivances against him, but only how they had contrived to fly away, and containing withal certain reproaches against him, on account of the ill will he bare them. And when he came to these reproaches, he cried out most of all, and exaggerated what they had said, as if they had confessed the design against him, and took his oath that he had rather lose his life than hear such reproachful words. Okay, I'd say even this account by Josephus might have put him in some danger, because, you know, he's saying that Herod is lying, okay? And Herod has the...
he wrote this after the fact, because I think Herod...
Oh, after Herod was gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but he still would stand in disfavor with Augustus, because Augustus gave Herod his blessing on this score. Now, maybe he wrote this when Augustus had died already, okay? And the succeeding emperor could care less, all right? Continuing. At last he said he had sufficient authority, both by nature and by Caesar's grant him, to do what he thought fit. He also added an allegation of a law of their country which enjoined this, that if parents had laid their hands on the head of him that was accused, the standers by were obliged to cast stones at him and thereby slay him. Okay, there's no such law in Torah that I'm aware of, which though he were ready to do in his own country and kingdom, that this could be an Edomite law. Yet he did wait for their determination, and yet they came thither not so much as judges to condemn them for such manifest designs against him, whereby he had almost perished by his son's means, of course this is all in his imagination, but as persons that had an opportunity of showing their detestation of such practices, and declaring how unworthy a thing it must be in any, even the most remote, to pass over such treacherous designs without punishment. So again, we see Herod embellishing the facts and getting highly emotional over, you know, something that he, you know, he could have called other witnesses. He didn't have to do this, but he wanted to make sure that his sons were condemned.
This is sort of like the injustice we see in the court systems today.
Mm-hmm.
Where they stack the deck, they bring all these charges, lots and lots and lots of charges, hundreds of years of time to get you to sign a plea bargain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They scare you into being silent.
Right, and most of that stuff would not be relevant in a court case, because you can't bring up past crimes in a court case.
But people are panicking.
Oh, yeah.
So they go along with it.
Right, yeah. And most people don't even know that all that kind of
stuff is irrelevant. No, they're not lawyers. They don't know the procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a secret society. Lawyers keep all that stuff secret.
Right, that's correct.
They don't want you to know, so they don't want you to know, so they can steal your dough.
Right. Yeah.
Section 3.
Okay.
When the king, quote unquote, had said this, and the young men had not been produced to make any defense for themselves in absentia. See, there you go.
Right.
The assessors perceived there was no room for equity and reconciliation, so they confirmed his authority.
Wow. Judge and jury.
Because they wanted to leave the room alive.
Yeah, right.
And in the first place, Saturninus, a person that had been consul and one of great dignity, pronounced his sentence, but with great moderation and trouble.
Yes. Understood.
And said that he condemned Herod's sons, but did not think that they should be put to death. He had sons of his own, and to put one son to death is a greater misfortune than any other that could befall him by their means. Well, okay, Saturninus is an Edomite.
Right.
Edomites don't behave. They
throw mama under the bus, right?
Right. After him, Saturninus' sons, for he had three sons that followed him and were his legates, pronounced the same sentence with their father. On the other hand, Volumnius' sentence was to inflict death on such as had been so impiously undutiful to their father, and the greatest part of the rest said the same, insomuch that the conclusion seemed to be that the young men were condemned to die. Immediately after this, Herod came away from there and took his sons to Tyre, where Nicolaus met him in his voyage from Rome, of whom he inquired after he had related to him what had passed at Berytus, what his sentiments were about his sons, and what his friends at Rome thought of that matter. His answer was that what they had determined to do to you was impious, and that you ought to keep them in prison. And if you think anything further necessary, you may indeed so punish them that you may not appear to indulge your anger more than to govern yourself by judgment. But if you incline to the milder side, you may absolve them, lest perhaps your misfortunes be rendered incurable. And this is the opinion of the greatest part of your friends at Rome also, unquote. Whereupon Herod was silent and in great thoughtfulness and directed Nicolaus to sail along with him.
Okay.
Section four, over to you.
This begs the question, can a Jew be merciful? So, Herod had already condemned them in his mind. He wasn't going to moderate his decision. They're dead. You're dead. Section 4. Now as they came to Caesarea, everybody was there talking of Herod's sons. And the kingdom was in suspense, indeed. And the people in great expectation of what would become of them. For a terrible fear seized upon all men. Lest the ancient disorders of the family should come to a sad conclusion, and they were in a great trouble about their sufferings. Nor was it without danger to say any rash thing about this matter, nor even to hear another saying it. This is like the Bolshevik Soviet Union. You dare not criticize the commissar. Okay.
That's like the fake news jingle that we got in the
TV. Yeah, right. No, you can't say that.
We can't say that. Mm-hmm. I love that.
So, and you know who rules over you when you find out who you can't criticize. But men's pity was forced to be shut up in themselves. which rendered the excess of their sorrow by very irksome. But so everybody was biting their tongues and lips and other body parts, no doubt. Yet was there an old soldier of Herod's
who missed a thing.
Oh, did?
Was very irksome, but very silent.
Oh, okay. All right. Yet was there an old soldier of Herod's, whose name was Tero, who had a son of the same age as Alexander, and his friend who was so very free as openly to speak out what others thought about the matter, and was forced to cry out often among the multitude and said, in the most unguarded manner, that truth was perished and justice taken away from men. Okay, you will be deplatformed for telling the truth. Yeah. While lies and ill will prevailed and brought such a mist before public affairs that the offenders were not able to see the greatest mischiefs that can befall men. And as he was so bold, he seemed not to have kept himself out of danger by speaking so freely. But the reasonableness of what he said moved men to regard him as having behaved himself with great manhood. And this at a proper time also, for which reason everyone heard what he said with pleasure. And although they first took care of their own safety by keeping silent themselves, yet did they kindly receive the great freedom he took. For the expectation they were, that's why people listen to EFR, because they're happy to hear the truth, right? It pleases them.
We're the only one with the stones to say it.
That's right. For the expectation they were in of so great an affliction put a force upon them to speak of Tero whatsoever they pleased. So Tero was making a name for himself, like Judge Jeanine, right? Or who's the other guy at Fox? Tucker.
Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, I mean, they
Sean Hannity.
Yeah, they really pushed the issues. Okay, back to you, Section 5.
Okay, this is Section 5. This man had thrust himself into the king's presence with the greatest freedom and desired to speak with him by himself alone, which the king permitted him to do, where he said this, since I am not able, O king, to bear up under so great a concern as I am under, I have preferred the use of this bold liberty that I now take, which may be for your advantage, if you mind to get any profit by it, before my own safety. Where is your understanding gone and left your soul empty? Where is that extraordinary wisdom of yours gone? Where
he's an Edomite.
You have performed so many and such glorious actions. Whence comes this solitude and desertion of your friends and relations, of which I cannot but determine that they are neither your friends nor relations, while they overlook such horrid wickedness in your once happy kingdom. Do you not perceive what is happening? Will you slay these two young men, born of your queen, who are accomplished with every virtue in the highest degree, and leave yourself destitute in your old age, but exposed to one son, who has very badly managed the hopes you have given him, and two relations whose death you have so often resolved on yourself? Do you not take notice that the very silence of the multitude at once sees the crime and abhors the fact?
Yeah.
The whole army and the officers have sympathy for the poor unhappy youths, and hatred to those that are the actors.
Whoa.
In this matter.
Oh, actors. Wow, this is plain speaking, folks. Man.
These words the king heard, and for some time with good temper. But what can one say when Tero plainly touched upon the bad behavior and faithlessness of his servants? He was moved at it. But Tero went on further and by degrees used an unbounded military freedom of speech, nor was he so well disciplined as to accommodate himself to the time. So Herod was greatly disturbed, and seeming to be rather reproached by the speech than to be hearing what was for his advantage. While he learned thereby that both the soldiers abhorred the thing he was about, and the officers had indignation at it, he gave order that all whom Tero had named, and Tero himself, should be bound and kept in prison.
Wow.
You're a truther. Lock him up.
Yeah, right. Tero should have quit while he was ahead, right? He had Herod actually thinking about his misfortunes and bad judgment. But then, now, I don't know what this implies, military grade free speech. I guess that means you better watch what you say, because you might be court-martialed for it, right? So maybe that's what military free speech implies. All right, section 6. When this was over, one Trypho, who was the king's barber, took the opportunity and came and told the king that Tero would often have persuaded him, when he trimmed him with the razor, to cut his throat. Whoa. That is Herod's throat, not his own throat. For that by this means he should be among the chief of Alexander's friends and receive great rewards from him. When he had said this, the king gave order that Tero and his son and the barber should be tortured, which was done accordingly. But while Tero bore up himself, his son, seeing his father already in a sad case, and with no hope of deliverance, and perceiving what would be the consequence of his terrible sufferings, said that if the king would free him and his father from these torments, for what he should say, he would tell the truth. And when the king had given his word to do so, he said that there was an agreement made that Tero should lay violent hands on the king, because it was easy for him to come when he was alone, and that if when he had done the thing he should suffer death for it, as was not unlikely, it would be an act of generosity done in favor of Alexander, right? Everybody wants to kill the you-know-whos, those of us who are Jew-savvy, but if we were to publicly state that, come on, everybody, let's go kill the you-know-whos, you know, they'd be knocking at our door, right?
They sure would.
Yeah, and we get terribly close at times. This was what Tero's son said, and thereby freed his father from the distress he was in. But uncertain it is whether he had been thus forced to speak what was true, or whether it were a contrivance of his in order to procure his own and his father's deliverance from their miseries. Well, I perceive that this information would not help Tero at all, or him. Back to you.
Well, we'll find out here.
Mm-hmm.
Section 7. Pardon me. As for Herod, if he had before any doubt about the slaughter of his sons, there was now no longer any room left in his soul for it. But he had banished away whatever might afford him the least suggestion of reasoning better about this matter, so he already hurried to bring his purpose to a conclusion. He also brought out 300 of the officers that were under an accusation, and as also Tero and his son and the barber that accused them before an assembly, and brought an accusation against them all, whom the multitude stoned with whatever came to hand, and thereby killed them. Alexander also and Aristobulus were brought to Sebaste by their father's command, and there strangled. But their dead bodies were in the nighttime carried to Alexandrium, where their uncle by the mother's side and the greatest part of their ancestors had been deposited.
Like the Tower of London, right?
he had them strangled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing stuff. Okay, there's a footnote at the very beginning of section 8.
Right. The reader is here to note that this 8th section is entirely wanting in the old Latin version. As Spanheim truly observes, nor is there any other reason for it, I suppose, than the great difficulty of an exact translation.
Okay. All right, but they've provided anyway, section 8. Okay, and this is the last section of chapter 9 we're in. And then we go
chapter
to
chapter 11.
Chapter
we're in
11.
Chapter
All right,
11.
Okay, and we go to a new book after this. Okay,
right.
Let's go. Okay, and now perhaps it may not seem unreasonable to some that such an inveterate hatred might increase so much on both sides as to proceed further and overcome nature. I'm sure he means filial love. But it may justly, that's assuming that Jews have filial love, but it may justly deserve consideration whether it be to lay at the charge of the young men that they gave such an occasion to their father's anger and led him to do what he did. And by going on long in the same way, put things past remedy and brought him to use them so unmercifully. Or whether it be laid to the father's charge that he was so hard-hearted and so very tender in the desire of government and of other things that would tend to his glory that he would take no one into a partnership with him, that so whatsoever he would have done himself might continue immovable. Well, this demonstrates, you know, the vast majority of father-son changes of power in the ancient world were very, how should I put it, you know, easy, an easy matter. You know, when the king, patriarch, emperor got old, he would groom his eldest son to take over, and they would have a co-regency.
Like, yeah. David and Solomon.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And David was very careful not to offend Solomon. He had the opportunity twice to kill Solomon. I mean, Saul. Sorry, Saul. But he didn't, which shows that David...
No, I'm talking about Solomon,
his son. Okay.
David got old and then turned
the kingdom over
to his son while he was still alive.
Right, yeah, but Solomon never had any design to kill David, right? So, yeah.
No, right.
But this, yeah, that's how the...
That was the transfer of power that you were talking about.
Exactly. And so Herod just suspected everybody and could not tolerate, he couldn't even trust his own
sons. Well, you know, because of the inbreeding and all that stuff and the devilish DNA, that they have mental difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
yes.
Reasoning and compassion
and
love are alien to them.
Mm-hmm.
They are alien beings. They're not us.
Right. So he couldn't even trust his own offspring, even though their mother was an Israelite, not an Edomite, which would automatically make them somewhat better than Herod himself. But this, he was immovable. Or indeed, whether fortune has not greater power than all prudent reasonings. Whence we are persuaded that human actions are thereby determined beforehand by an inevitable necessity, and we call her fate. Because there is nothing which is not done by her. All right, this is actually kind of Marxist, right? Fate, right? We don't have free will, but fate causes everything. Wherefore, I suppose it will be sufficient to compare this notion with that other, which attributes somewhat to ourselves and renders men not unaccountable for the different conducts of their lives. Yeah, we are accountable. Which notion is no other than the philosophical determination of our ancient law. Well said, Josephus. We are accountable. Accordingly, Of the two other causes of this sad event, anybody may lay the blame on the young men, who acted by youthful vanity and pride of their royal birth, that they should bear to hear the calumnies that were raised against their father, while certainly they were not equitable judges of the actions of his life, but ill-natured in suspecting and intemperate in speaking of it, and on both accounts easily caught by those that observed them and revealed them to gain favor. All right, the lesson is, if you are next in line to gain the kingdom, keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut.
Absolutely.
Yet cannot their father be thought worthy of excuse as to that horrid impiety which he was guilty of about them, while he ventured without any certain evidence of their treacherous designs against him, and without any proofs that they had made preparations for such an attempt to kill his own sons, who were of very comely bodies, and he was even jealous of his own sons on this account, folks. That was revealed last week. He was actually jealous of his own sons. It was his Edomite countenance, jealous of their half-breed Israelite countenance. To kill his own sons, who were very comely bodies, and in the great darlings of other men, and no way deficient in their conduct, whether it were in hunting or in warlike exercises, or in speaking upon occasional topics of discourse. Indeed, one of his sons, in order to flatter his father, would miss the target deliberately, so that Herod would feel superior. For in all these they were skillful, and especially Alexander, who was the eldest. For certainly it had been sufficient, even though he had condemned them, to have kept them alive in bonds, or to let them live at a distance from his dominions in banishment, while he was surrounded by the Roman forces, which were a strong security to him, whose help would prevent his suffering anything by a sudden onset, or by open force. But for him to kill them on the sudden, in order to gratify a passion that governed him, was a demonstration of insufferable impiety. Wow. I mean, this is straightforward speech here from Josephus. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Herod was dead by this point in time, and I think Augustus was also. He also was guilty of so great a crime in his old age, nor will the delays that he made and the length of time in which the thing was done plead at all for his excuse, because there is none. For when a man is on a sudden amazed and in commotion of mind, and then commits a wicked action, although this be a heavy crime, yet it is a thing that frequently happens. But with Jews, not so frequent among our people. But to do it upon deliberation, and after frequent attempts and as frequent puttings off to and frequent people pleading on his son's behalf, to undertake it at last and accomplish it was the action of a murderous mind, and such as was not easily moved from that which was evil. And this temper he showed in what he did afterward, when he did not spare those that seemed to be the best beloved of his friends that were left. It was dangerous to be a friend of Lenin, Marx, Stalin, etc. Wherein, though the justice of the punishment caused those that perished to be the less pitied, yet was the barbarity of the man here equal in that he did not abstain from their slaughter also. But of those persons we shall have occasion to discourse more hereafter.
Sounds like Vince Foster.
Right.
Okay. Right. Anybody that was around the Clintons, mm-hmm. even their bodyguards.
Yeah. Vince Foster was Hillary's lover.
Arkansas.
He was Arkansas-ed. That's right. Absolutely right, Pastor Steve. Okay. We've got about 15 minutes left. Let's get started on Book 17.
There we go. This is Book 17, and it contains the interval of 14 years. And this is from the death of Alexander and Aristobulus to the banishment of Archelaus. Let me get a little drink of coffee.
Yeah. So we are approaching the death of Herod in the next few chapters. We will continue this discussion of Josephus until, and perhaps maybe a chapter or two after the death of Herod, just so people get an idea of Herod and his posterity and how they ruled and how terribly they ruled. Back to you.
This whole horror story is very close to what goes on in our government today.
That's correct.
All of this.
That's correct.
The intrigue. You see how they proved that Trump did not collude, but yet they're still hammering on that.
Mm-hmm. Still lying about
Trump's,
it.
Trump's no saint, and he's not our savior, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't trust Trump because he's shielded for the Jews.
Yeah, he's playing games. He's playing games, so.
Yeah. This is how Antipater was hated by all the nation and of the Judeans for the slaughter of his brothers, and how, for that reason, he got into peculiar favor with his friends at Rome, by giving them many presents.
Very Jewish.
Bribes.
Mm-hmm.
As he did also with Saturninus, the president of Syria, and the governors who were under him, and concerning Herod's wives and children.
Mm.
When Antipater had thus taken off his brothers, he engineered that.
Mm-hmm.
And had brought his father into the highest degree of impiety, until he was haunted with furies for what he had done. His hopes did not succeed to his mind as to the rest of his life, for although he was delivered from the fear of his brothers being his rivals to the government, yet did he find it a very hard thing and almost impracticable to come at the kingdom, because the hatred of the nation against him on that account was become very great. And besides this very disagreeable circumstance, the affairs of the soldiers grieved him still more, who were alienated from him, from which yet these kings derived all the safety which they had. In other words, he's afraid of the rebellion and mm-hmm. assassination.
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel.
Because he was a rat.
That's right.
Whenever they found the nation desirous of innovation, and all this danger was drawn upon him by his destruction of his brother.
Okay, let me interject here. Antipater was a pure Edomite. Antipater's mother was an Edomite woman, not Miriam, or Mariamne, I think her actual name was.
Mariamne,
who was the mother of his two half-brothers, Aristobulus and Alexander. So you see in Antipater the typical Jewish conniving and chutzpah. Back to you.
Yeah, he's 100% Edomite.
That's right.
However, he governed the nation jointly with his father, being indeed no other than a king already, for he was for that very reason trusted, and the more firmly depended on, for the which he ought himself to have been put to death, as appearing to have betrayed his brothers out of his concern for the preservation of Herod, and not rather out of his ill will to them, and before them to his father himself, and this was the accursed state he was in.
What a pity.
Yeah. Now all Antipater's contrivances tended to make his way to take off Herod, that he might have nobody to accuse him and the vile practices he was devising, and that Herod might have no refuge, nor any to afford him their assistance, since they must thereby have Antipater for their open enemy. Insomuch that the very plots he had laid against his brothers were occasioned by the hatred he bore his father.
Amazing.
Boy, these are some real prize
people. Is there anybody that loved Herod?
I don't know.
There weren't any Judeo-Christians in those days. Back to you.
Yeah. But at this time, he was more than ever set upon the execution of his attempts against Herod, because if he were once dead, the government would now be firmly secured to him. But if he were suffered to live any longer, he should be in danger upon a discovery of that wickedness of which he had been the contriver, and his father would of necessity then become his enemy.
Mm. Yep.
Boy.
It must be horrible to be a Jew.
Oh, they can't even entrust their own family.
Right. Yeah, they can't even trust. Yeah, exactly.
And on this account, it was that he became very bountiful to his father's friends and bestowed great sums on several of them in order to surprise men with his good deeds and take off their hatred against him. And he sent great presents to his friends at Rome, particularly to gain their goodwill, and above all, to Saturninus, the president of Syria. He also hoped to gain the favor of Saturninus' brother with the large presents he bestowed on him, as also he used the same art to Salome, the king's sister, who had married one of Herod's chief friends. And when he counterfeited friendship to those with whom he conversed, he was very subtle in gaining their belief and very cunning to hide his hatred against any that he really did hate. This
wow.
guy was a, he was a real snake, man.
He was worse than his father. Wow. Is that possible?
Back but he could not impose upon his aunt, who understood him of a long time and was a woman not easily to be deluded, especially while she had already used all possible caution in preventing his ruinous design.
Mm. Mm, mm, mm.
Although Antipater's uncle, by the mother's side, was married to her daughter, and this by his own connivance and management, while she had before been married to Aristobulus, and while Salome's other daughter by that husband was married to the son of Callias.
Mm-hmm.
Yet that marriage was no obstacle to her, who knew how wicked he was, in her discovering his designs, as her former family to him could not prevent her hatred of him. Now Herod had compelled Salome, while she was in love with Sylleus the Arabian, and had taken a fondness for him, to marry Alexas.
Okay.
Which match was by her submitted to at the instance of Julia, who persuaded Salome not to refuse it, lest she should herself be their open enemy, since Herod had sworn that he would never be friends with Salome if she would not accept of Alexas for her husband.
Right.
So she submitted to Julia as being Caesar's wife. And besides that, she advised her to nothing but what was very much for her own advantage. At this time, also, it was that Herod sent back King Archelaus' daughter, who had been Alexander's wife, to her father, returning the portion he had with her out of his own estate, that there might be no dispute between them about it.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, Archelaus and his daughter would have been greatly relieved at this development. That's
Right.
one good thing has come out of all this, that Archelaus's daughter was not put to death. Okay. So, and
well,
then,
we've got about 3 minutes. We really don't
right.
have time.
No, to get into the rest, yes.
Right.
This is quite astonishing history, folks. Absolutely astounding. And also this section one of book 17 sheds a good light on Julia, the wife of Augustus, as being fair-minded and demonstrating concern for Salome's life. That she advised Julia advised Salome to do what Herod wanted. Otherwise, her head might be chopped off, right?
Well,
so you know, it's,
everybody was dancing around
the
trying
maypole.
To avoid getting whacked.
Yeah, right, the maypole. But instead of fun and frolic, if you let go of the maypole string, you get your head chopped off. So you better hold on to that string really tight, folks. But that's what happens when you have a pagan, like Herod, a pagan Edomite, posing as a Judahite king. All right? If nothing else, Josephus proves conclusively that Herod was an Edomite, an imposter, and he was a putcher, for lack of a better term, who took power by force with the Roman army, in exactly the same way that today's Jews, Herod's descendants, have taken over the so-called Holy Land again. But it is no longer the Holy Land because Yahshua placed a curse upon it while he yet walked the earth, and that curse has not been lifted, folks. It's all charade. That's
yep.
what it is. It's all
yep.
charade.
It's
Jewish
a desert. There's no water. They have to import food. All of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they're just what a mess. What
right?
a mess.
Yeah, and they can't even keep their own people healthy. I'm talking about the Jews, because I just read a report about the Jewish hospitals in Kyrgyzstan have the lowest hygienic standards of all hospitals in the world. And
yep.
and death by and Jews are dropping like flies in their own hospitals because they don't give a damn about each other.
Nope.
They
I
don't.
Got a quick announcement here.
Okay.
Coming up following this show is a rebroadcast of The Origin of Freemasonry by Brother Hebert. There was a glitch the last time it played, so it is rebroadcast immediately following Bloodlines today.
Right. Yeah, and then
stay tuned for that.
Very good. Okay, thank you. I see Brother Hebert is in the chat with the link to that article. Okay, so you can.
Well, I carefully loaded it in.
Okay, very good.
So we're just about out of time. May Yahweh bless and keep you,
yeah.
folks.
Yes, and Voice of Christian Israel will follow that. That's, I think, a 2.5-hour presentation. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition, folks. We'll see you next time.